Okay, again, welcome to everybody that's on the call. For the sake of everybody knowing who's who when you're speaking, and also for the recording, if you would identify yourself when you speak, that would be helpful. Glenn, would you quickly do a roll call?
Yes, I will indeed. Chuck Gomes, who is the leader of the call, James Liddell, registrar, Ken Stubbs, registry, Tony Harris, ISP, Tim Ruiz, registrar, Alan Greenberg, ALAC, Bacon de la Chapelle from the Observers, David Maher, registry, Robin Gross, NCUC, Steve Metallitz, IPC, Lee Elgin, IPC, Steve Del Bianco, business constituency. Have I missed anybody?
Thank you, Glenn.
Pleasure.
And possibly others will join us as we get going here. Any concerns about the agenda that was distributed and that is posted on the site? Okay. The first thing I had on the agenda then was to briefly discuss the question I raised. We obviously, as a group, are kind of rewriting some hypotheses in some cases. In other cases, they're really not changing very much. But the question I raised was whether or not we should go back to the original submitters of the studies in cases where those people are not on this group and just communicate to them what we're doing and see if they have any comments. I'm not thinking of initiating a process where they have veto power or something like that, but rather to at least get their comments in terms of what we're doing. So what I'd like to do, first of all, is just see what you guys think about that. Should we do that? Should we just go ahead and do our exercise without communicating with them?
Sorry, Chuck, this is Olga. I just joined the call. How are you?
Thanks, Olga.
Chuck, it's Ken Stubbs.
Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I think these people invested a lot of time and energy to begin with, and I think it's a good idea to call on their expertise.
Ken, you're very hard to hear.
I'm sorry. Hold on. Yeah, these people spent a lot of time and energy developing these things. I think that we would benefit from their assistance fine-tuning anything forward. Makes sense.
Chuck, this is Steve Del Bianco.
Steve, anybody else?
Yeah, Alan.
Okay, I've got Steve and Alan. Anyone else? Okay, Steve Del Bianco, go ahead.
I do think we should consult with the original drafters of the studies, and perhaps even with the GAC, considering a number of their questions made it in there.
Right.
One of the questions is the timing. I think we ought to first do our best at translating, consolidating, textualizing their hypotheses in this broader document, and give them an opportunity to see that document, specifically on whether we have, you know, butchered or benefited their original hypotheses, see how we've drafted it together. That would be my recommendation.
Thanks, Steve. Let me comment on that before I give it to Alan. My thinking, and I guess I'm testing my thinking on the rest of you right now, is that we would probably give maybe a week turnaround time for them to comment on what we do, and that I don't think we would have to wait until the very end of all of our work to send out what we've done. For example, this morning we should finish Area 1. We're just going to follow up to see if there's anything else on Area 1. It's my opinion that we could actually reach out to those who authored the studies in Area 1, who suggested the studies in Area 1, with regard to what we've done, this week, and give them week turnaround time. Let me first ask Steve that if that's consistent with what he's thinking, and then allow others to comment on that.
Yes, it's consistent, Chuck, as long as they see it in context. So that if you asked Claudio DeGongi with INTA to look at Area 4, for instance, it would be after we've consolidated and combined and restated the hypothesis for the whole Area 4.
So you're talking about the context of the whole area. Okay. Yeah, so in other words, what you're suggesting then is when we go, not just to go back with the specific hypothesis of one study to the individual, but let them see what we've done for that whole area.
Especially so if we decide to consolidate in any way. If study one and study seven are effectively the same thing and we consolidate
them. Oh, gotcha. So it's not so much by area as with respect to any consolidation we may have done.
Yeah, but of course we're doing the consolidation within area. So it sort of get both.
Well, this is Steve Metallic. Could I get in the queue?
I'll put you in right after Alan, Steve.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Alan.
Okay. I basically support what's being said. I see no reason to once we have a given area done, I see no reason to cut it into pieces and only send select pieces to back to the people. I do strongly support going back to them. We already had one case where the originator was present and said, you mangled it. So I think that there's a lot of merit in doing that. I agree with Chuck that, Chuck and somebody else, turnaround's going to be critical, and a week should be enough. If they can't get back within that time, then you know we probably have an issue. But I see no reason not to send them the whole area, but with a little arrow pointing to the one that we think is theirs.
Okay. All right. Steve Metallic.
Just to say that if we want them to see it in context, I mean, I'm not confident that there's totally watertight divisions between these different categories that have been recognized. So, I mean, if they want, you want them to see it in context, you might as well send them the whole thing. And if you give them just a week to turn around, then it only holds things up a week. Otherwise, we might be doubling back to areas we've already completed and so forth. This way, if you wait till the whole document is ready and send it to all of the study proposers, then you get all any comments they have and decide what to do with it.
So your suggestion, Steve, is that we wait till we're done with the whole package and send the whole package out.
I think if you want them to see the context, that's the whole context.
Now, keep in mind, and then that may be fine, but keep in mind that that's probably more than a week delay, especially if there are serious concerns about us mangling their hypothesis.
That's true. In the case of mangling, we would have to they would have to tell us within a week.
So I wonder if it would make sense to do it on an area by area as a preliminary step, so that we can flag any mangling issues earlier, and then with the commitment that we'll send them the whole package when we're done.
It's Alan. I strongly support that.
Does that work, Steve?
Yeah, that's okay with me. I mean, I don't feel real strongly about this. I just think that
whole thing. Yeah, gotcha. No, that's a good point. Okay, thanks. Anyone else on that?
This is Lee Elgin again. I agree with Steve. I mean, I don't feel really strongly about it. I mean, my thought is we should just wait till the end and send everything out at the end once we get all the hypotheses, distilled as we see fit. Only because I feel like from a process flow perspective for our group, we're getting every week comments back from the various, study originators, I feel like it's just going to kind of bog us down week to week. I'd rather just push to get through all the hypotheses and then send them out to everybody at the end and
deal
with it.
So you wouldn't send out an early message like I suggested?
I guess not. Again, I don't feel really strongly about it if the group thinks otherwise. I mean, this is just a process issue, but I just kind of feel like I thought the progress we made last week in just trying to forge ahead was productive, and I feel like if every week we, spend X amount of time talking about comments we receive back, I feel like it'd be maybe better to do that in one session all at the end, after we give a week or two for the submitters to provide comments on the entire package.
So is there any strong objection to that approach?
This is Tim Chuck.
Okay, Tim. Go ahead.
I just wonder how that really fits in with our, with what we've been asked to do. I know we have probably some latitude to do that, but I guess my thinking would be that we do it at the end. We don't allow that to hold up our report to the council, and subsequent comments that may come in could be gathered by the council and considered as they deliberate on the report that we create. So I guess I don't see why this would, why I would need, I would agree with sending out the request for comments, but I don't see a need for holding up our report to the council.
Well, I could see us giving a preliminary report to the council, but if in fact there's any significant responses back after we send the whole thing out, if we leave that, put that in the council's lap to deal with those, I think that's an awkward task for the council to handle, not having gone through what we have. So I think there may be some delay. Maybe it won't matter depending on the timing of the next, when the next council meeting happens after we're finished. I would think we would, on at least if we gave everybody a week to respond, I think that we've got to have at least a week to deal with that before we finalize the report to the council. Otherwise, we're just dumping any possible changes in the council's lap, which I think would not be very constructive.
Now, this is Tim. Then I guess I don't really support requesting the comments. That we complete our work, we submit it to the council, and let it go from there. My one opinion.
Okay.
It's Liz. I don't know if this is helpful or not, but we're really not talking about a cast of thousands here. For once, I'm just looking at the exact number, but we're probably only talking about a half dozen people, or eight at the most. And Steve and Claudio actually had the greatest number, plus Steve Del Bianco and Claudio. And then just there's one from Milton. These are folks we know who could, for the most part, probably participate in this process. We could reach out to them, at any time we want and ask for us. I think they'll be able to be responsive.
Yeah, and I guess I'm not totally clear on why we wouldn't want to reach out to them earlier rather, and then with the commitment to reach out to show them the whole package when we're done.
I mean, probably one reason is the back and forth, the language is obviously still in flux, and we don't want to go back to them too many times, but that's a good question.
All right. Well, let's. I don't want to spend any more time on this. I think what we need to spend time on is on the hypotheses. So let's just go ahead and we will once we're finished with the whole package, send it out. And again, I don't think we have to send it to people that are on this group. We're talking about, so in other words, we can narrow the group down to those that aren't on this group. And in cases where we didn't really significantly change a hypothesis that was clearly stated, one problem I think that a week's not going to work is certainly with the GAC. Let's not try and resolve that now, but we may want to be thinking about that as we go, because their situation's a little more complicated and their ability to respond is more timely. So, all right. Let's go on to the next agenda item. And is there any further discussion on the Area 1 hypotheses that we did last week? I didn't see any on the list.
There was just what Tim Ruiz and I, this is Steve DelBianco, were assigned to sort of articulate that note at the top of Area 1, Chuck.
Right, and are there any comment? Are there any? Is there any discomfort with what they did? Is everybody okay with what they did? That would be part of our submission. And you can see that on the wiki. If you look at that, Steve put it right in at the beginning of the Area 1 studies on that. So.
And this is Tim. I think I submitted just a note to the list about it, and I don't know if it's worth being concerned with or not. But when we're talking about what's returned from who is queries, there's a difference between what you might get or the way that would work on a web page or a web-based who is query. Versus, if somebody was just getting the 443 data straight up. So that, with number one there, the CAPTCHA, that's going to apply really only to the web-based whois, where number two could apply either way.
Good point, Tim. Don't we have a port 43 discussed explicitly in another area?
It is raised in another area. Whether it's applicable to this, I'm not sure right off. So, Tim, are you suggesting a modification of that introductory comment for Area 1?
Yeah, maybe only that we just note that number one is, in regards to web-based, who is queries, some looking for and automated email harvesting. Number two would apply either way. But again, I don't know if that's an important enough distinction to have to make or not. I mean, I think that the comment that's made there is perfectly accurate.
I could narrow it, Tim, to say under one, some registrars prevent automated harvesting by allowing public web-based access.
There we go.
That would help?
Yeah, I think that would clear it up perfectly.
Okay. So, Steve, why don't you make that change in the wiki and and go ahead and save it, and then if we each refresh, then we'll see the change in there. Is there any other discussion on what Steve and Tim did here?
Hey, Chuck, it's Liz. That's fine and helpful for them to make the change right in the wiki, but I wanted to let you know that I also created another Word doc of the updated hypotheses that you, including the way you have the statement from Steve added, so that when we get down into Area 2, if we start doing heavy editing, I can capture it for everyone, and then I can put it back in the wiki.
Thanks. I appreciate you reminding me of that. That is helpful so that people can see the actual changes made.
Changes made so you can refresh.
Okay. All righty.
What a team. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Anything else on Area 1? All right. Then let's jump into Area 2. Now, I hope I did my cut and pasting okay, but I took Jim's proposed hypotheses for Area 2 and pasted them into the wiki here, so everyone should be able to see those right in the document. And Liz, did you get them in your so that you can use them in your Word document as well?
I just did it, so right before the call, so I think I have it the way you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got Area 16. Study 16 is the first one that comes up there, and that study is to conduct legal analysis under the laws of a variety of jurisdictions of the terms of various registrars' registration agreements concerning data collection and disclosure and their process for collecting such data and obtaining consent. So let's take a look then at what Jim did, and what he suggested here for us to start with is that registrars are not or are incapable of collecting consent in their, what's TOS, Terms of Service?
That's correct.
Yeah, and or registration agreement that satisfies the consent requirements of some, most, all data protection and privacy laws. Let's stop right there for a moment. Okay.
Steve Del Bianco, and when I check this against Claudio's original, it's very close, although Claudio had said to obtain legally valid consent in the first line, and I took that to be a subtle but important distinction. I don't think we're implying here that registrants don't understand about the consent. It's really whether it's legally valid under the second half of the sentence, right? So I just would wonder, Jim, if we put legally valid back in to stay true to what Claudio had in mind.
I agree.
And where would you put that, Steve?
After collecting.
Okay, so collecting legally valid consent.
Okay, I've got that.
And then, Claudio's, sorry, Jim, your first bullet, your first assumption here is that local laws have exclusions, explicit exclusions. And I didn't see that in Claudio's submission, anything about this assumption. So you added that, and I was wondering if you could just explain the thinking behind it.
Well, I tried to gather anything that I thought was implied by the statement and then the falsification that was submitted. And I felt that that was implied in that if such an exclusion could be what was present that gathering consent would satisfy that exclusion.
So may I ask a follow-up on that? Because I
sure.
saw a little bit of that, but I never saw where Claudio assumed that some nations have explicit exclusion for something like who is, or was he simply implying that nations have exclusions if you obtain proper consent?
It's a good question, and you know, I'm fine with the assumptions. I was just trying to provide some context with what I was trying to gather from an implied statement of the hypothesis and then the falsification.
Thank you. And
so if it can be removed, I really don't have strong feelings about that.
I would say we keep it, and I'm just seeking some clarification for how you came up with it.
Hi, this is Bertrand. Just one suggestion. Do I understand well that for the first assumption, the question applies that in the end, it actually means that there are exclusions that for information submitted under consent to publish in a public database, that would be applicable to a database such as WHOIS? Meaning that it's not an explicit exclusion mentioning WHOIS, but that the general rule would be applicable to a database such as WHOIS?
I think that's correct. Does anybody disagree with that? Thanks, Bertrand.
So how would I capture that?
That would be in the end. For information submitted under consent to publish in a public database, comma, that would be applicable to a database such as WHOIS.
Thanks.
Well, this is Steve Metallis. Can I get in the queue?
Go ahead, Steve. By the way, as a general rule, if we don't have multiple people trying to talk, I'm not uncomfortable if people jump in like you just did, Steve. When there's multiple ones, I'll immediately start forming a queue, but just to fulfill keep things moving, I'm okay if you jump in. We don't have that super large a group that if it becomes a problem, I'll manage it differently. Okay?
Thank
Go ahead,
you.
Steve.
I'm still a little unclear about what the assumption is intended to convey here. Is this an assumption that, is this part of the hypothesis? In other words, would the investigation try to prove or disprove this statement? Or would we, if it's an assumption, what if that assumption turns out not to be true, I guess is my question. I'm not clear about, does that mean we can't conduct this study?
Let me take it a little different direction and see if I'm going along the same path you are, Steve. First of all, is it, if I can get my screen show back up here. Okay, there we go. Are the assumptions really different hypotheses? In other words, is the first assumption really a separate but related hypothesis that needs to be tested?
This is Lee Elgin. I tend to agree with that. I mean, I feel like the first assumption sounds like to me sort of a different hypothesis. And frankly, in my view, and I could be wrong here, but I kind of feel like it's subsumed within, you know, the ambit of the first hypothesis. And you know, I guess I don't really know whether the assumptions are necessary, because I think I don't think necessarily, especially with respect to the first one, that it builds per se on what was originally submitted by Claudio. And I know we're all sort of trying to read tea leaves as far as what the original submitter intended. And of course, if we go back to the original submitter, maybe we'll get some clarity on some of those points. But with respect to this, I think that this first hypothesis, or this first assumption rather, which I think is more like a hypothesis, is something that would be considered in the context of considering the overall or testing the overall hypothesis.
So are you saying then, Lee, that maybe we don't need the assumption?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, thank you.
And Chuck, I would just throw out, this is James, I would just throw out there that by including the legally valid statement after collecting, that it really kind of obsoletes the need for any other, for this assumption.
Okay.
By putting that back in, maybe that was the thought that I was trying to expand upon. But again, you know, I'm just...
Thanks, James. Appreciate that. Now, is anybody opposed then to deleting the first assumption? I think it keeps the hypothesis simpler. Okay. So we could remove that. What about the second assumption? Does the same thing apply, or is it different? By the way, Steve Metallis, are you okay with what we just did since you raised the issue?
Yeah, I guess I am. I mean, I have a kind of a broader concern about this, but I don't know if I wonder if I should raise it now or after we get through the other assumption.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, I know that we're just here to draft hypotheses and not to evaluate, but what the direction that the GNSO Council originally gave was for comprehensive, objective, and quantifiable understanding of key factual issues. And this is not a factual issue. This is a legal analysis, a judgment, to a greater or lesser degree, subjective. The factual issues here would be, what are registers doing to collect consent, and have there been any legal proceedings in which the validity of the consent that they've obtained has been adjudicated? If that's what's meant here, maybe we should spell that out, because I think analyzing, you know, what the law is and whether this particular practice satisfies it is not really a factual investigation. It's a legal issue.
Yeah, and in fact, Steve, my personal perception is that several of the suggested studies are really more gathering of facts than they are really testing hypotheses. Now, it may be a very good idea to gather the facts, and probably that's a much less expensive exercise than doing a study testing a hypothesis.
Not if you involve lawyers.
I'll leave that one alone for now. Anyway, I think we're going to end up with several things that are in that category, and I think it's going to be the council's responsibility to differentiate between those kinds of things, and we may still want to go back to staff and say, hey, we don't see this as more as a study that's going to test a hypothesis so much as we see gathering some data. How much would it cost to gather the data? Because we may still want to do that. Does that make sense?
Well, what I said could also be put in terms of a hypothesis. I mean, you could say the hypothesis is that registrars don't have a uniform method of obtaining consent to collection of this data, and hypothesis two would be no registrar has been adjudicated to the method that registrars use to obtain consent has not been adjudicated to be invalid under any country's law. Those are our hypotheses can be proven or disproven.
Okay.
But they don't go to whether the investigator thinks something is what the Belgian law is on this and whether the investigator thinks it's being honored or not. It would ask, has the Belgian authorities ever, or has there ever been any litigation in Belgium in which the invalidity of this method of obtaining consent has been adjudicated?
So, Steve, with regard to study number 16, do you have a specific recommendation with regard to the hypothesis? And keep in mind, we can have more than one hypothesis for the study. What do you suggest?
Well, I don't know if this is consistent with what Claudio has proposed, but I guess my hypothesis would be that there is not a uniform method of obtaining consent that registrars use to obtain consent to collection of data for who is purposes, and that no registrar has been adjudicated to have an invalid method of obtaining consent.
Now, are you suggesting that wording replace what the main hypothesis is right now, yes. or in addition to?
Well, I would put it out as an alternative to that.
Okay, thank you. That's what I wanted to know. Thoughts on that?
Chuck, this is Jim.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I agree with what Steve is saying, and just that wanted to point out that that concern could really be more broadly applied to almost all of these studies grouped in this area. There are several of them that explicitly mention a comparative legal analysis as opposed to fact gathering.
Yeah, and let's not worry about that aspect of it. I don't think that's our concern in this group. But what should we do with this hypothesis? Steve has proposed an alternative. Why don't you say that again, Steve?
The alternative hypothesis, which has two parts, is that registrars do not have a uniform method of obtaining consent for collection of data for who is purposes. And part two, no registrar has been the method used by there's not been an adjudication that the method used by any registrar is invalid under the laws of any country.
Thoughts on that? As an alternative to what we have down now.
That doesn't really address the disclosure part in the original description.
Elaborate on that a little bit, Alan.
Well, the original one, if I'm reading the right thing, says conduct a legal analysis on the laws of various jurisdictions, so on, and the various terms of various registrars' registration agreements concerning data collection and disclosure of their process for collecting such data and obtaining consent.
I think that's a good point. I think the original proposed hypothesis doesn't address that either, but it focuses on
correct.
Alan, do you have a suggestion as to how that could maybe a third hypothesis? Assuming we had two, like Steve suggested.
Registrars, you know, appropriately or not appropriately, depending on which tone do you want, clearly disclose the, you know, their intent to collect and use that and how they use the data. That's not well worded, but that's essentially a hypothesis.
Huh?
Yeah, this is Bertrand. I'm sorry and apologies to everybody for my insufficient knowledge of all these things, but when I read the sentence, do I understand right that what is addressed here is that there are some laws that require when you collect personal data that you explicitly give consent? And the assumption that, or the hypothesis that...
Request consent.
Yeah, request consent. The hypothesis that is intended to be tested here is that when, for instance, a registrar says, in order to get the domain name you want, you need to make your data available in the database, this is not or could not be or could be considered as not a valid free consent because it's forced in some way. Is that what we're trying to address? And sorry if I misunderstand everything. Is that the point that was, because it's different from disclosure. It's basically if I go to a website, to a registrar, and I request a domain name, and this registrar tells me, in order to get this domain name, you give me a certain amount of information, and this will be put in a database that will be public, and I have no way to opt out, is the question, is this a valid consent?
I think that's. I think the questions you're raising are part of our dilemma in terms of finalizing a hypothesis here, Bertrand.
This is Tim. Can I take a minute?
Go ahead. Who was that?
This is Tim.
Tim, was there someone else there?
This is Steve. Steve. I'll go after
maybe.
Okay, Tim.
I was going to say maybe Steve can respond, but I think the second part of Steve's suggested hypothesis covers just that, right? That the method of consent or whatever hasn't been invalidated under any set of laws or something of that nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. Mm-hmm. I think the question, there are two ways to pose this question. One is in the situation Bertrand is talking about. One is it a valid consent?
Mm-hmm.
And someone, some ICANN investigator would decide whether it's an invalid consent or not based on his or her legal analysis. The other way, which is a more factual approach, is to say, has the validity of this consent been drawn into question under that country's law, and has it been adjudicated? So that if the court has said this method of obtaining consent is not valid, then that's what the that would prove or disprove, depending on how you phrased it, the hypothesis. And I'm supportive of the latter way of doing it, because I think it's better for us to be trying to test factual hypotheses rather than commissioning legal analyses.
Right. Yeah. I would agree with you on that. Now, does anybody disagree with what Steve just said?
Steve Del Bianco asking a question. As a factual matter, will we be able to determine whether challenges were filed and how they were adjudicated? Is that something that we can research in a factual way?
Well, I think, again, that's getting into a question that really isn't the mission of this group. I mean, it's a very important question to ask when we decide whether we can do some studies or not, because if it's not doable, there's no use spending money on it.
Well, it's vital to this distinction, because Steve is indicating that finding lawyers to figure out whether something is legally valid is a different kettle of fish than researching to determine whether challenges have been filed and how they ended up being adjudicated.
Right.
So the second part of that, I think Steve is implying, is something that is a fact that could be tested. The first is something that only lawyers can speculate on until things have been adjudicated.
Steve Metallis, do you agree with that?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, Steve Del Bianco was raising the question of is that data available, and I think that's probably going to vary from country to country. It's probably more available in some countries than in others. But that would be, you know, we also say various jurisdictions. Someone would have to decide which jurisdictions we're going to look at.
Now, is there anybody that's opposed to Steve Metallis' suggestion in terms of the two hypotheses for number 16?
Chuck, this is Beppo again. Sorry for taking the floor so much. Just a comment to Steve Metallis. At the same time, I fully understand that one is more factual than the other. But the point I just want to highlight is that by choosing this, we are indeed indirectly bringing a bias in favor of a situation that could be not positive, but that hasn't been tested in the courts yet. So fundamentally, it's raising the bar very much by considering that as long as it hasn't been challenged, it is natural and should be preserved. And this is where the two approaches are potentially conflicting. One is easier to test, and it's true. Has it been challenged? And then if it has been challenged, at least we have a very factual answer. But the general public interest approach requires also to wonder whether something is appropriate or not. Whether we can give an answer or not is another question. And I agree it's harder. But I just want to highlight the fact that we are naturally giving a bias in favor of the statu quo by taking into account only the factual a position in the court.
Okay, let me suggest.
This is Tim. Could I get in the queue on that one?
Just 1 second, Tim. What I'd like, Liz, have you captured what Steve Metallis has suggested as the two hypotheses for number 16?
I've tried, but I haven't.
Okay, then let's do that. Okay. So Steve, if you can give back to Liz in a deliberate fashion so that she can capture it, I would appreciate that.
Okay, the hypothesis A would be that registrars do not have a uniform method of disclosing and obtaining consent for collection of data for WHOIS purposes. That's A. And
Hold on 1 second, make sure.
Method of disclosing and what consent?
Obtaining.
Yeah, I've got
obtaining consent.
Okay.
For collection of data for WHOIS purposes.
Why don't you, when you're done, Liz, why don't you read that back, make sure we've got it, and then we'll go to the B.
Well, I was a lawyer, I couldn't tell you. Registrars do not have a uniform method of obtaining or disclosing of data for who has purposes.
You know, of disclosing or obtaining consent.
Oh, sorry.
For collection of data for who has purposes.
Disclosing or obtaining consent for collection of data for who has purposes. Got it.
Okay, and now B.
And B is the methods employed by registrars to disclose and obtain consent have not been adjudicated as violating national law.
Okay.
Read it back, please.
Hang on.
Is this going into a wiki right now, or is this offline?
This is offline.
Okay.
It's too hard in the wiki to edit. I was a lament. The methods employed by registrars to disclose and obtain consent have not been adjudicated as violating national law.
Right.
Did I get it?
Yep.
Okay, now, my first question to the group, and Tim, I haven't forgotten you, okay, is that is there anybody generally opposed to going this direction? Keep in mind that we may need to tweak these a little bit more. I think Bertrand was suggesting maybe a possible... Maybe we need to adjust the wording of the second one, but we'll get there in a minute. Is there anybody that's generally opposed to the direction that Steve Metalis is suggesting? Okay, so we're kind of on the same page there. Now, let me go back to Tim. Go ahead, Tim.
I was just going to respond to the concern about the bias. And I think that, I don't really necessarily agree with that. I kind of understand what he's saying, but the other thing to consider is that, going the other way probably ensures a lot less likelihood that the study would be pursued, and so that's a consideration as well that in regards to this hypothesis. So I think what Steve is proposing is a good compromise, and as regards to the bias is concerned, I think whether it's been adjudicated or not is a good indication, at least, as to whether it violates national law or not. But I think the biggest concern is just making sure that what we produce is what the council has asked for, and I think what Steve is suggesting is more closely in line with that.
Okay. Liz, let me suggest that you cut and paste, if you don't mind, what you have on this one, since we've spent so much time on it, in addition to, don't delete what we have in 16 right now in the table, but just add the what you have after what James put in there so that everybody can see it.
Okay, I'm going into edit mode now, so.
Thank you. We won't do this every time, but in this particular case, because of a major change, I think it would be easier for people to follow. And then once she has that in there and saved, we can each refresh and see that. We can clean up the overall thing later. We don't have to worry about that now. And then what I want, once we can do that, my next question is okay, any further edits to what Steve Metalis has proposed, keeping in mind that next week we'll have a chance to come back like we did with Area 1 today. We'll do that each week to follow up to see if anybody thought of something else.
I'm saving now, so it should be just a second before you can...
Okay.
Yep, I'm done.
Okay, so if you refresh your screen...
Maybe I'm the only one, but I'm not sure where on the wiki these things are.
Just if you go to the main the main page for this working group, and you scroll down, there's a very big table. And I didn't get anything when I refreshed.
You know what? It said when I did it that someone else was editing at the same time.
Oh. So if everybody would make sure you're out of edit mode so that Liz can have...
So I refreshed too, and I didn't see it either. It did take, though, so I'm wondering if we need to refresh again.
I'll try it again to refresh.
So I want to make sure I don't just...
You did it in the big table, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything when I refreshed under 16. You put it right in 16, right underneath gems.
I even put, like, new above
it. Yeah, okay.
And then I had old.
And all right, well, okay, I don't want to spend any more time doing that. Read them back for us one more time, and what I'd like people to focus on, sorry, it's orally only, to see whether you think there are any other possible edits you'd like to suggest.
Number one, registrars do not have a uniform method of disclosing or obtaining consent for collection of data for WHOIS purposes. Number two, the methods employed by registrars to disclose and obtain consent have not been adjudicated as violating national law.
Any suggested changes on that? Okay. Then, Liz, and you don't try to change this in the wiki now, just in your Word document. But that's what we'll go with for now. And if you have comments on that between now and next Tuesday, please put them on the list. And secondly, there will be a brief amount of time early in the agenda for reviewing these.
Chuck, this is Bertrand. Sorry, one possible word change for the second sentence.
Okay.
Is to start with whether the methods, blah, 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 have been adjudicated as contrary to national laws.
Any problems with that?
It's only a question of whether you have a hypothesis that you want to prove or disprove. If it's a whether statement, then you can't.
Yeah, I think Steve's right.
It could be either way. You could take out not, have not been adjudicated. Or you could say have been adjudicated.
No, but this is why the question is whether it has been adjudicated or not. It's testable still, and it prevents the choice of it has not been or it has.
Well, but the answer could be yes.
Yeah, I think my suggestion is that we leave it as it was, and we can have some discussion on the list in the coming week in that regard. Okay, going to study number 22. Now, James, did you intend these to be three separate hypotheses, which is fine, by the way? Is that the way we should look at these in number 22?
Well, more of a compound hypothesis that I was trying to extract from the first paragraph of the study was that, if everyone has it there, we can read it again, but I would say they are linked. It is a compound hypothesis.
Okay, thank you. And what Kathy Kleinman had submitted there was survey top 25 to 30 CCTLDs determine the extent to which CCTLD WHOIS policies reflect national data protection laws and priorities. So you can see what Jim has put there. CCTLDs contain WHOIS policies that are more restrictive than ICANN requirements for GTLDs. National data protection laws within the CCTLD territory are driving the more restrictive WHOIS policy. And then third, or C, a trending, as a group, CCTLDs are moving towards more restrictive WHOIS policies that satisfy national data protection laws.
Chuck, this is Tony Harris. Can I comment?
Tony, you're first. Let me go ahead and take a cue on this one. Anybody else?
Steve Misalitz.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, Tony, go ahead.
Well, more than a comment, it's just a question. I don't know, it's probably, if it's too much work, but it would be perhaps useful to know which CCTLDs were considered to make these conclusions, to come to these conclusions.
First of all, nobody's making these conclusions, Tony, if I'm understanding you correctly. These are conclusions that would be tested to see if they're true or false.
Okay, but it does mention, Kathy does say survey top 25 to 30 CCTLDs.
Correct.
I was wondering if, you know, any CCTLDs in particular had been looked at, which produced this comment or this hypothesis.
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think that's something. And
just curious. That's all.
If the council decided to pursue this particular study, then it would have to be decided whether you survey 25 to 30 or do a random sampling or whatever. That's the kind of
details. How to define top.
Makes sense.
I understand. Yeah.
Makes
Thank
sense,
you.
Tony? Thanks.
Yes.
Okay, good question. And then I had Stephen Talis.
Yeah, it strikes me that A is a testable hypothesis here because you can look at what the policies are and compare them to the GTLD policies. But I don't think B or C are testable based on this survey because B is a causation question. We can determine what the CCTLD who is policies are, but they don't usually say why they are that way. I mean, maybe some do.
I don't want to get too much into the testability, but I actually think you're raising some points that are really important here. I agree with you on B. I'm not sure I do on C. I think that you could actually test to see if there is a trend in that direction. That wouldn't be too hard to test.
On C, you'd have to look at what the policies were in the past, too.
Yeah, or you could survey, you could actually survey CCTLD operators and trust their judgment in terms, and that probably wouldn't be too risky a thing to do, but I think you're probably right on B.
It's Alan.
Go ahead, Alan.
I'm finding I have a disconnect between what was in the original submission and the hypothesis. The original submission seems to be asking,
mm-hmm.
Do CCTLDs respect the laws of the data protection laws and priorities of the countries in which they reside? The hypothesis all seem to be how do these policies, which may or may not respect their local laws, compare to ICANNs and GTLDs? Which direction are they going on? I don't seem to see the connection between what Kathy submitted and what the hypotheses are.
Well, you have an alternative suggestion. Don't you guys love it when I do that?
I guess the alternative is, considering the top 20, 25 to 30 CCTLDs, do they respect the national data protection laws and priorities of the countries in which they reside? The hypothesis is they do.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
or they don't.
Go ahead, jump right in.
I'm not saying that the hypotheses there aren't interesting, but I don't see the connection between them and what was submitted.
Steve Del Bianco in the queue.
Go ahead.
And we're talking about study submission number 22 and the letter A under testable hypothesis, right?
Well,
A, B, and C.
We haven't restricted ourselves to A, B, or C, but we are talking about 22. You're correct.
22A does add the GTLDs at the last part of the sentence, and I think that's what the previous speaker just noted. It wasn't really in Kathy Kleiman's original submission 22. I think you're right, and we could fix that by changing A to say that they are more restrictive than ICANN's WHOIS requirements for registrars.
And this is Jim.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, the original wording in the submitter's hypothesis was general ICANN WHOIS policy.
Okay, I don't have those in front of me, so.
Okay.
Those are yet a third place.
Yeah, so
if I made an assumption or presumption by compressing that to GTLDs, then.
Well, keep in mind that ICANN doesn't have WHOIS policies for CCTLDs. So when we're talking about general WHOIS policies, we're
mm-hmm.
talking about GTLDs.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't think we need to be worried too much about that part. Steve Del Bianco, state again how you would rephrase A, please.
The last two words. Instead of ICANN requirements for GTLDs, ICANN requirements for registrars capture who is data.
Is that really any different than for GPLDs?
Well, apparently, based on your clarification, the only place registrars are required for who is data is if they're selling a GTLD name. Is that correct?
And I think that's correct. Does anybody disagree with that?
But I do think that that using just GTLD the way it's written now makes it seem as if this is a conflict between what CCTLD and GTLDs. But the question here is whether ICANN's requiring registrars to do things on the CCTLD that are in conflict with the laws of that country, right?
This is Tim rejoining.
Okay, thanks. Okay, welcome
Chuck,
back.
Chuck, can
Tim,
I just put
sorry about clear. The other line ringing.
I'd like to get in the queue, too.
I can't talk when I'm on mute, so let's go ahead and Steve, I'm okay with your suggested change. How do others feel about
that? Chuck, this is Tim.
Go ahead, Tim.
Can I got knocked off, and I just rejoined.
Okay, Steve Del Bianco, read your suggested change to A, 22A. Did we lose Steve Del Bianco?
That are more restrictive than ICANN requirements for registrars to collect data for who is. But I will defer to James. I think he's trying to finesse the question. It's just the use of the GTLD that throws off our audience. That we don't want to do that. We want to really focus them tightly on the CCTLDs and the national law.
Right. Okay. James,
this
you want to?
Tim, can I ask a question here?
Go ahead.
The results of these studies will be used and applied towards who is policy regards to GTLDs, and this is the GNSO. So it seems to me that if the hypotheses that we come up with, you know, aren't going to, you know, result in data that's going to be applicable to policy in regards to GTLDs, then what's the point? So I think, I don't know what James' reasoning was to, you know, straight out, but it seems to me to be a reasonable thing to try to assume that any study requested or proposed, you know, ultimately is going to result in data that would be somehow compared or used in regards to policy for GTLDs. But I don't see the problem with that.
So you're okay with the way it's worded right now? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Chuck, this is Steve Metallitz.
Go ahead, Steve.
Okay. I agree that A is worded okay as it is. I think Alan was raising a somewhat different question, and it really kind of goes back to what we talked about on number 16, which is, are we trying to do a legal analysis here or a factual analysis? And I think in that sense, this does make deviate from what Kathy Kleiman had asked for. But I think in line with what we discussed on 16, I would agree with you that A is testable, and I guess you're right. If you survey the CCTLDs and ask how their policies have changed and why, then you would get some information about C as well, I suppose.
Yeah, and of course we're going to the council is going to ultimately have to decide in consultation with the constituencies and so forth whether or not to pursue any of these further. So we that'll be decided later, but let's see. Is there any problem with eliminating B?
This is Beth Holm. May I make a suggestion regarding A because in the present?
Okay, before you do that, I let people answer my question. Okay, is there any problem if we delete B? And does it detract in any way from what we think Kathy intended?
Mm.
Okay, so
there's something missing if you delete it. The wording is probably not appropriate, but the relationship between the more restrictive policy and the national law is the purpose of the study that is proposed by Kathy Kleiman, if I understand well.
Other thoughts on that?
This is Robin.
Go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, hi. I've been having a hard time following the discussion, but I'm inclined to agree with Bertrand that we need to make sure that that element remains in the study that Kathy's proposing.
Okay. Can you come up with a way to frame it in such a way that it's a testable hypothesis?
May I have a go?
Sure.
B, that would be those whose policies have been adopted in order to become compliant with the national privacy law of the territory. Or data protection, sorry. Data protection laws within the territory.
Steve Metallis, let me give you first crack.
Yeah, well, one way you might do that is to say CCTLD administrators report that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then what Bertrand?
Fine with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically,
good.
We'd be asking them, why do you
mm-hmm.
have this policy? And they would say, this is why or this
yes.
is why.
Or that it's a factor in the policy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's anybody opposed to that? Okay, good. So we've actually tweaked it so that it certainly becomes more testable.
Mm-hmm.
Again, our goal isn't to determine testability of these, but some of them kind of jump out if we don't word them correctly, that
mm-hmm.
it's kind of a waste of time. So that's helpful. Liz, were you able to capture B?
Yeah. CCTLD operators report that WHOIS policies have been adopted in order to become compliant with data protection laws of the country.
Mm.
Any concerns with that?
The word territory is more appropriate than country.
Okay, got
that.
Okay, let's go back to A, and Bertrand, I think you had a comment on A.
Yeah, actually, I would support using in the end the term general ICANN WHOIS policy instead of ICANN requirements for GTLDs. And as worded today, at present, actually, hypothesis A is not testable, because you cannot answer by yes or no, because it implies that all CCTLDs contain. So I would suggest that we, and furthermore, the term contain is not appropriate for policy, so I would suggest the wording. Some of the 30 top CCTLDs have adopted WHOIS policies that are more restrictive than the general ICANN WHOIS policy.
Okay, I guess I missed the distinction of your change from what's there now. Run that by me again, please.
The first one is introducing some of the 30 top CCTLDs instead of having CCTLDs, and that's all. Because CCTLDs,
I got that part.
Okay?
I got that part.
And the second thing is just replacing contain WHOIS policies by have adopted WHOIS policies.
Oh, okay.
It's just linguistic.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah, I was looking for something different than the linguistic change, so I gotcha now. So that's why I was missing it, because I was expecting something different.
No. Sometimes
okay.
It's good.
Liz, were you able to capture that?
Some of the 30 top CCTLDs have adopted WHOIS policies that are more restrictive than ICANN's requirements for registrars that collect data for WHOIS.
No, the formula that was than the general ICANN WHOIS policy.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Now, just a comment. My own personal opinion is I don't think we want the word some there, because that becomes, what does that mean? Two or three, four? You know, delete the word some and say, the top 30 CCTLDs have, and so on.
No.
Now, the study then can determine whether, you know, evaluate in terms of quantifying it and so forth.
Now, Chuck, when we say top, do we mean largest?
I assume so. Anybody think differently?
That's the only way we could really gauge it. This is Tim. I have a comment as well.
Go ahead, Tim.
When we say, you know, the general ICANN policy, I mean, I don't know what that is. ICANN contracts with GTLD operators and with GTLD accredited registrars contain WHOIS requirements. There have been subsequent policies, but I don't think we would want to imply any restriction to just those those separate consensus policies, because they're very few and have very minor effect on what actually the intent is for some of the data gathered from these studies. So to me, it still seems that requirements is more appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the bulk of what we're concerned about and what we haven't been able to find consensus on to date.
Let me make a suggestion on that, because I think we're spending too much time on whether we use GTLDs or general WHOIS requirements or whatever. Why don't we just say, then, ICANN WHOIS requirements? Now, for anybody that knows anything about those, it's just related to GTLDs. It's just related to the GNSO today. Mm-hmm. So is that okay?
Yeah.
Then ICANN WHOIS requirements? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we have now for A, Liz?
Actually, I didn't catch that last change. You wanted to do ICANN WHOIS
that are more restrictive than ICANN WHOIS requirements.
Got it. Okay. The 30 top CCTLDs have adopted WHOIS policies that are more restrictive than the, and no more general?
No.
Okay. Then the ICANN WHOIS requirements.
Correct. Any concerns about that?
What if the answer is no, and there are only 15 of the 30?
That's part of that's the data we're going to get back.
Yeah, so the point is to know how many. So it is a testable hypothesis that how many have actually adopted more restrictive policies.
Good point. Maybe we need to say... a significant number? I didn't like the word some, because some's so vague that how do you test it?
Chuck, it's Alan.
Go ahead, Alan.
It strikes me that by trying to adopt methodology which says everything has a testable hypothesis with an answer of yes or no,
mm-hmm.
implies that the people doing the work are going to have an awful lot of detailed information which they're not potentially going to pass on to us.
By the way, I'm not sure where we came to the conclusion that testable hypotheses have to be yes or no answers.
But even if it's 23%, they're collecting data which is going to be useful to us, mm-hmm. and I would like to think that whoever is next in the list of working groups of actually trying to formulate some policy out of what we learn will be able to use that kind of data. We really don't, it's elegant to say let's test the hypothesis, but it's not clear that that's really going to get us to some endpoint in a lot of these cases.
Well, keep in mind, too, that even if it's a short answer, like a yes or no hypothesis, that any study that would come back would have the supporting data to back that up.
We need to make that clear.
Yeah. Well, and that's easily doable.
Why cannot it be formulated, sorry to jump in, formulated just as a simple question, like, how many of the top CCTLDs have adopted policies that are more restrictive?
We're trying to work these in the form of a hypothesis, okay? So...
I was not in the first conference call, but I agree with the previous comments. This is, here as before, restricting us in a way that doesn't lead to a very simple formulation.
Well,
in this case, we have a simple question.
I don't really think
that's what we're asked to do by the council. And I think a lot of what's being raised here will be debated on the council, but those are council issues. Those are the questions that will be deliberated during council meetings. What we've been asked to do is to create a hypothesis.
Question that decision at this point, but I know it's not ours to question. But nevertheless, we're using our time.
Well.
So let's see if we can zero in on A. How should we start it? Should it be most of the top 30 CCTLDs? Should it be a significant number of the top 30 CCTLDs? Should we not have any qualifier and just say the top 30 CCTLDs? Any one of those, a study is going to have to provide some data to answer the question. And in my opinion, in a study, it's not just the the short answer that you're looking for. It's the data that backs it up.
Yeah,
any,
but if
any opinions in terms of how we start that start A off? Okay. Anybody opposed to us saying most of the top 30 CCTLDs? Okay.
Why most? How much is most? Can we say 67.3% of the top 30 CCTLDs?
Okay, we're nitpicking. Okay, I don't want to
say
go
a
there.
Say a significant number. You know that it's not that.
Do you like significant better?
No, restrict. Yeah, and this isn't restricting what's done with the data once it's collected.
Exactly.
This is just an hypothesis for the council to use to deliberate on which ones to pursue. A lot of us on this call are on the council, so we're hearing all of these arguments already. And the data will still have to be collected and will still be available to the council in any decision as to whether to pursue policy.
Yes, but I'm sorry if I'm the black sheep here, but what I'm seeing is a general trend that is totally biased in terms of getting answers that say, no, the majority of actors have not adopted stronger policies. Even if there are 10 CCTLDs, I'm sorry, it's important.
Bertrand, please make a specific suggestion as to how you would start this.
I said transform this into a very specific question, which is how many CCTLDs?
We're not going to go the question route. We're formulating testable hypotheses.
Well, I mean, okay, I have a problem with the method there, so I'm sorry, I was not involved.
That is what this group has been tasked with.
Yeah, but I mean...
Okay, Alan, do you have a suggestion?
I don't have a suggestion. I'm basically in agreement with Bertrand. I think we need to follow up with this on email, not have the conversation right now in the last 10 minutes of this meeting.
I agree with Alan and Bertrand on this. This is Robin.
Yeah. I have no problem following up on email, but this is a methodological question that we'll find over and over again.
I think we're doing a lot of mangling to meet a set of criteria, which perhaps we're wrong-headed despite the good intent. But I'll say it further on email.
Well, I would appreciate it if you would keep in mind that we need to follow the task that we've been given. Okay? Let's go to C.
May I have a formulation, and if it doesn't work, I will close it here.
Sure, that's what I've been looking for.
Okay, and the formulation is more restrictive WHOIS policies than the general ICANN's WHOIS requirements have been adopted by some of the 30 top CCTLDs.
That's fine. I think we can probably smooth it out a little bit, but that was the first crack. So, anybody have a problem with that? Alan?
I can live with that.
Okay. Liz?
Okay, let me be sure I've got it. More restrictive WHOIS policies than the general ICANN WHOIS requirements have been adopted by the 30 top CCTLDs.
By some of
them. By some of
them. Thank you.
Any problems with that? Okay. Let's go to C.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
C. The suggestions on that one. I don't think we need the word trending there.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay besides that?
Well, can someone remind me what B now says?
Liz?
Sure. CCTLD operators report that WHOIS policies have been adopted in order to become compliant with the data protection laws of the territory.
Uh,
as a, okay, I guess I'm not sure what C adds here, except it's sort of longitudinal, right? It's saying that more CCTLDs now have restrictive policies than did in the past. Is that what we're trying to get at? And maybe that's just the way to put it. More CCTLDs have restrictive policies now than they did in the past. Mm-hmm. Because, first of all, as a group, these CCTLDs aren't doing anything as a group. I can be pretty sure of that. I mean, each CCTLD is setting its own rules.
Yeah, Chuck, this is Jim.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that the original submission uses the word momentum and asks, is there any direction or momentum on this issue?
Again, I think we can, without spending too much time on this, and as James points out, you know, it was in the original. So whether or not the GNSO decides to move forward on this, I think, Steve, you did capture it right. Is there a trend of CCTLDs becoming more restrictive in their WHOIS policies to satisfy national data protection laws?
Yeah, and you just say the hypothesis I guess would be more some of the CCTLDs surveyed have adopted more restrictive policies than they followed in the past, motivated by concerns around the data protection laws or something like that.
Is that different than what James had there? CCTLDs are moving towards more restrictive WHOIS policies that satisfy national data protection laws?
No, I guess I would just take out as a group.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah.
They're not doing anything as a group.
Yes. So is it okay if we leave James's alone? We delete trending as a group and then leave it as is?
Well, again, I would want to say motivated by data protection concerns, because we're not making a legal judgment here about whether they're following.
They satisfy, okay.
But we're just reporting what they say.
So so it would read, CCTLDs are moving towards more restrictive WHOIS policies motivated by national data protection laws. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. You get that, Liz?
Let me just be sure. CCTLDs are moving toward more restrictive WHOIS policies motivated by national data protection laws, yes.
Okay. All right. Then we're to number 23 and several others that I had lumped together that seemed to be pretty similar in terms of intent of study. And James took a crack at several of those within there. This one obviously gets a little more complex, and we only have about 6 minutes or so left. So I'm not sure we can tackle this one here.
Chuck, can I make a suggestion?
It may be that
we'll want to relook at some of these others in this area based on what we've discussed on 16 and 22. For example, 23 really is about a legal analysis, so I think we need. I mean, I'm not quite sure how we do the hypothesis there to make
right.
it a factual question.
Right.
But I think it might be worth looking at all the others in this area, well, some of the others in this area, in light of what we've done on 16 and 22.
Correct. And let me see if we can get a two or three volunteers, or it can be one person if that's the way it works out, that would tackle this group. And it can include 12 and 13, GAC 12 and GAC 13 that James added in there because they were part of the original grouping. And take a stab at this one for us to start with in our meeting next week. Any volunteers?
Well, Steve Metalis, I'll take a crack at some of these.
Thank you.
And now, Steve, this is James. I'll volunteer or you know, serve as a adjunct or whatever you need from me.
Great. So let's work together on that.
That'd be great. Now, let me ask you two guys, does it make sense for you to also take a crack at 24 in light of everything that's gone on today? Or is it sufficient to treat 24 separately?
We can put 24 in that group as well.
Is that all right, Steve?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. And Steve Del Bianco already has some suggested hypotheses in Area 3. Tim, you were going to do Area 4. Can you still work on that?
I submitted it to the list. Did it?
You did submit it to the list?
Yeah, this morning.
Let me look. I haven't obviously been looking at email here. Let me take a quick look at my email.
We'll check and make sure I send it to A1.
And Tim, I haven't been getting any of your stuff either.
Don't see it, Tim. So that's probably the problem. I don't know what's happening there, but what you may do is resend it to the list, and why don't you list me separately so that if I see it's not going to the list, I'll forward it onto the list. I don't know what's happening, okay? And I think that'll be more than enough for next week's meeting. So next week what we'll do is we'll pick up in the second area where we left off, and of course we'll review 16 and 22 just to see if there's any final changes. Hopefully we won't revisit the whole have to spend as much near only a brief amount of time there. And then our next meeting will be the same time next Tuesday. Any questions or comments?
Dr. Steve Del Bianco, with respect to Area 3, I may not be able to be on the call next Tuesday. I would welcome people who have suggestions on the way I wrote up 3 to send them before Tuesday, and I'll try to respond.
That would be great. So please try to do that. His are fairly concise, so it should be a fairly easy exercise other than going back to the original study submissions. So if you would do that, it would be much appreciated and would facilitate our time next week. And again, any discussion we can do during the week on the list hopefully will speed up our time on the call, so that would be encouraged. Okay, if nobody has anything else, I think we've spent another hour and a half. Thanks, everybody, for the contributions, and we will continue during the week.
Thanks, Chuck.
Okay, bye.
Thanks.
Thank you.